What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature, with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? It's Metal Shop, sort of, kind of. Well, I'm at home right now. I'm just kind of staring at some posters on my walls and hanging out and drinking a kombucha. It's Thursday, and on the phone right now, I've got Ian Shelton. He is a Northwest guy, but he is, I believe, down in L.A. right now. Is that correct?
Yep, down in L.A.
And he's from the band Regional Justice Center. He's done a ton of projects from here in the Northwest. He's now doing Regional Justice Center, kind of blowing up in the like power violence noise, like harsh hardcore scene. And he's also like a video producer and director for music videos and small films and whatnot. He also does a rad podcast. Can you mention the name of the podcast again?
The name is I Don't Care If This Ruins My Life, the longest, worst title possible.
But, hey, man, it's a good listen, and I definitely listen. So it's kind of funny when you talk to someone that you listen to a lot, even though you haven't talked in a long time. It almost feels like you're just picking up conversation, but you're like, actually, I've just
definitely
been.
I think people feel that a lot, too, because, I mean, people come up to me or DM me or whatever, and we'll talk about things that I said on the podcast. But when you talk for an hour straight, I'm sure you relate to this.
Oh yeah.
You don't know what the hell you said.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, oh, I said that.
Okay. I brought up like obscure references to this guy. Oh, you know Tom from Axe to Grind. I brought up obscure references when I was interviewing him about Indecision. He's like, holy dude, you like know this podcast more than I do. I'm like, well, I'm a nerd. What can I do? So first off, man, like, obviously the world's kind of f***y right now. How's it going? How are you holding up? Are you kind of just, obviously we're all kind of doing the stay at home thing. What have you been up to? How are you staying sane?
I've just been existing between home and the practice space. Luckily I have a lockout spot that we aren't locked out of. Like, so I can just go there. I've been going there every day for about 4 hours. My motivation's been kind of going away a little bit as time's been going on, but like I'm preparing to record the next Regional Justice Center LP this upcoming week.
Yeah.
And then basically, like, because I had all the songs written, I was like, I'm going to do a palate cleanser. I'm just going to write a demo for a new band.
Oh, wow.
So I, like, wrote a demo for a new band, demoed it all out, and then I went to an actual studio and recorded it. All of this has begun, and then now, basically, yeah, that's it, just making music. And then watching stupid shit on Netflix and playing Fortnite.
Well, so Ian, the other guy from Metal Shop, he sometimes plays Fortnite, but he has he made the mistake of telling these kids how old he was, and they just clowned him.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, you're 31? Ha, 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 you suck.
See, I don't play with strangers. I play with just a couple friends.
Okay.
Actually, all of which still from the Northwest. I'm like, our gamer group chat is based out of Seattle.
Yeah. Nice, man. Well, this new project, what's kind of the vibe?
So I used to do a band called Seattle's New Gods, and it's somewhat an extension of that. It's like kind of Amphetamine Reptile style, like rock music.
Yeah.
A bit of grunge in there. But then I wrote one song that, like, definitely sounds, it's either people are like, oh, this sounds like AMRAP, or they think, oh, this is like Discord, Discord Records stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, which I think is kind of a lot of my stuff, super aggressive has fallen into. Yeah, I don't know. I just like rock music, I guess, like noisy, weird rock.
Nice. Well, it was a couple years ago, but I had Seattle's New Gods. I don't think you came up to Loud and Local.
I didn't come up. No, I was excited to come up, but we had just got home, I think, from an East Coast tour, and I was hanging out with my girlfriend, and I was like, I'm a little tired.
Fair enough.
I was going to stay home.
Yeah, well. So I had Seattle's New Gods in studio, so I got to ask, I haven't heard much from Seattle's New Gods. Are you guys officially done or just kind of on hold?
I wouldn't say it's officially done, but it's definitely not active. I mean, it's really difficult with me living in L.A., and mm-hmm. I think that's a band that's really dependent on me putting in a lot of effort to keep the train moving, and I think that it's just been proven that there's not really a way for me to keep multiple projects on the road, so I'm just like, all right, I'm just doing this, and if there's a time when we can, I would love to play more music with them, but it seems increasingly unlikely.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll get something, but, you know, obviously, you know, your focus is Regional Justice Center, this new project, and then we'll definitely be talking about Regional Justice and talking about your video work and whatnot, but I wanted to ask you, so you're originally from the Enumclaw-Buckley area.
Yes, Enumclaw.
What is the most popular band ever from Enumclaw? Because I'm going to say Ruckus.
I mean, Ruckus. So Ruckus was before my time.
Okay.
You know, I moved to Enumclaw when I was, I forget what year it was, but it was right before the Enumclaw horse sex incident.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. For me, like, I remember when I was coming up Pistol for a Paycheck.
Yeah, shout out to Rev.
Was the band. Like, I went to I was still in middle school, and I went to a show at the high school.
Okay.
Paycheck was the band that, like, would actually go play Tacoma and Seattle and, like, all that. I don't know what Ruckus is, what their...
I mean, I saw them at Club Impact a couple times. That's about it.
Yeah. Club Impact.
What about the Americommies, though?
The Americommies. I remember them. So I used to play in a band called Bully, and we played with the Americommies quite a bit.
Well, okay, so let's talk a little bit about this, man. You're growing up in Enumclaw, not necessarily known for its, like, crack and punk scene or like, you know, insane nightlife. How do you get into the world of, I mean, your music, this isn't, you know, you're not playing pop punk. This is pretty extreme power violence. If you're just listening to this and you've never heard Regional Justice Center, press pause, find their Bandcamp, find Spotify, listen to this, because it's pretty intense. How do you go from being an Enumclaw, and I'm assuming it's kind of like you have like a gateway drug and you just get a little bit more extreme, but what was the first step into it?
So originally I was from Concord, California.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I got like my basis for punk was I had like a neighbor who was really into Ted Kennedy's and
oh, nice.
The Casualties and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then just serendipitously, like, my mom had one of her friends over and her, like, a CD booklet filled with punk CDs that had the Addicts and, like, all these CDs. And he actually left it at the house. And
oh,
so
cool.
I was just given this CD booklet of punk music.
Oh, that's perfect.
And then we moved. CDs. Moved up to Enumclaw. And so I was just like, I was basically street punk, but then that type of thing of like straddling, like still loving like Alkaline Trio mm-hmm. and Green Day, which I still do love those bands. But obviously there's a point where you shed them off, where you're a little bit more embarrassed of them. but then I made with these kids from Puyallup and Bonnie Lake, mm-hmm. and they were into G.G. Allin, and they were into Charles Bronson and all this. And I kind of had this through just Googling, like I got into like crust punk and a little bit of grind and stuff. And so I loved the extreme element of it. And then once I heard Charles Bronson, I was like, whoa, like this is the music for me. Like I have a short as hell attention span and it just does everything that I want it to do.
So back, so you said that, so the CDs, the CD booklet was step one, and then you move and meet all these people that are into like crustier stuff or like more gnarly stuff, and then you go a little bit step further. You said you're Googling stuff, but was this, were you ordering stuff? Were you, like
no,
doing rapid share?
LimeWire?
Okay.
It was really interesting because it was LimeWire days, and it was before I got SoulSpeak, and I just and as you know, like you get a lot of stuff that isn't actually what it says it is.
Oh yeah,
so yep. You know, I was listening to like early Magruder Grind and Spaz and stuff, and as I go back now, I try to find these songs, and I'm like, that clearly was not Spaz, and that clearly was not these other bands I think that it was. But yeah, basically I just used all of that to get, I used LimeWire to find a lot of the crust stuff, and then I would just burn CDs, and then basically they'd be mixes because I never had full albums.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
I was like out, laid out, you know, version of whatever I downloaded of a band, and I put it on a CD.
I still have some of my original mixes in the small binder. Like, they're probably so cringy, but, like, they're called, like, Kevin's Punk Mix 1 and Kevin's Punk Mix 2. And I'm like, man, I gotta keep these. It's probably got some lame... Or, like you said, stuff that, you know, it'll be, like, MXPX cover, but it's actually, like, Goldfinger. You're like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I remember there's still, to this day, I don't know who did it, but I had it. It was listed as Real Big Fish covering Video Killed the Radio Star.
I think it was Presidents of the United States.
What it actually was. What was that?
Was it Presidents of the United States?
Oh, it just broke up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Was that Presidents of the United States of America doing it, actually?
Oh, that might be. That might be. If they had a good, if they had a good version, I imagine that was actually it.
Okay.
But I loved that version of that song, and I had it on my little, I don't even remember what type of MP3 player it was. It was a terrible one. But, yeah, I just... All of these mislabeled things I love.
MP3 player, like, fits 10 songs. You're like, yeah!
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was like a 20 song one, and I would load up it every day before school with, like, different songs.
See, you're gaming it, though, because, like, you're gaming the system because your songs are, like, a portion of the length, so you can really fit, like, 100 Power Violence songs on it.
Yeah, if you had a Power Violence one back then you would have been really in the money.
So I gotta ask, because this happened to me, there were bands that like I love now, but when I first like downloaded them on like Napster or like LimeWire, I hated like Youth of Today. First time I heard it, I was like, oh my God, this is ass. I love Youth of Today now. Was there anything like that was just too early for you where you're like, nah, man. And then you come back to it now and you're like, dude, I love this.
Well, I had this weird, I don't know where it came from. I think I just was very West Coast centric growing up that, I hated things from New York. I don't know why I felt this allegiance to the West Coast, but I was like, New York hardcore, like growing up. I don't know why I thought that. Yeah, or it was like New York punk because it was pre like me being into hardcore proper. Yeah. And so I just hate it. Well, and I thought of things like Murphy's Law, which is something I still don't like. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, like, kind of like bandana dad vibe, like hardcore that like runs parallel to punk. Like, but no, I that was the one thing that I was like, for some reason, adverse to. But then I remember being like, well, I like Gorilla Biscuits. They're from New York. What do I do?
Uh-oh. You know, like,
felt a moral conundrum about it.
So what, what was your gateway to playing an instrument? Like, what got you, you know, off your couch and wanting to learn an instrument?
I just always wanted to play instruments, really. I mean, I always grew up, like, getting DVDs. I got a Blink-182 DVD mm-hmm. that was, like, them on tour. So from, like, age, like, from fourth grade on, I was aware of what touring was. And I was like, oh, my God. And, fifth grade, I got a bass, and that was when I was like, "All right, well, you know, I'm gonna be a rock star or something."
Do you remember your first show?
The first show I attended, yeah.
Was, no, I mean your first show you played.
I played the talent show in sixth grade.
Uh-oh.
I did a Green Day cover and like a very street punk original song in sixth grade.
Nice. What about like your first actual like gig? Like, did you play in Enumclaw or did you go play a gig in Tacoma or what about that? With your
first
own
actual show, I played in a band that was like a street punk band in high school, but we played like a house party in Bonnie Lake and a house party in Eden Claw, but like never like a show. I think honestly, I played in a band called Bully, and we went to play in Portland for our first show with a band called All Teeth that is now members. The people from All Teeth went on to do Culture Abuse.
Yeah, that's pretty huge. I remember seeing All Teeth play like it was like a post Rainfest little thing, like an impromptu show at the pizza spot. What was that spot called? The Sizzle Pie?
Wasn't it at Podog?
Yeah, it was Podog. Sorry, it was like right next to where Sizzle Pie was going to be. But yeah, it was Podog, and it was All Teeth and someone else. But yeah, it was really cool.
Zombie.
Yeah, that's right, Sabretooth Zombie. So, dude, like, that's pretty huge, going to Portland for, like, your first hardcore, you know, show in your band.
I mean, what's funny is one of those things where, like, this is because nobody would have booked us in Seattle, you know? Like, I don't think I had a band that played Seattle, because there was when I was coming up, there was such a period where kind of not many, like, people played Tacoma, like, smaller bands played Tacoma, like, nobody ever asked us to go play Seattle. And like, there's never an inn to go play Seattle. So we played Tacoma, Olympia, like Puyallup, all these places.
If you were to think about that, do you think it's because you guys were young? You didn't have any connections? Was there an elitist vibe? What was the disconnect?
Well, we were young and bad. So that was one of the things that really prevented us. But also, I mean, you remember this at the time, we're talking like 2006, 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. The vibe was very much elitist, very much put people down for sucking, which I believe is a good thing, because I was told that I made so I made better stuff, you know.
It was definitely a less all inclusive vibe than it is now.
Yeah, definitely. Which I think gatekeeping for the people that that feel the need to be behind the gate, it motivates, you know. So I think that in the end, I ended up writing better music because I was told that the music that I made sucked versus being told it was good.
Well, looking back, do you agree? Do you think the Bully stuff sucks, or does it bring a smile to your face?
Definitely early stuff. I think there's a lot of earnestness in the lyrics that I can't get behind now, just which I think is also speaks to the fact that I think I was actually making art in that moment.
Okay.
Is that it makes me cringe now because I was saying something so true to who I was at that point.
You're like, damn it, it's too true. Like, I should have held back a little bit.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing is, if you're really laying yourself bare and you keep growing, then when you look back at the bare version of you, you know, years ago, you're like, oh, why was I like that?
Dude. Yeah, like, I remember, what was it, in, like, junior high, I got, like, into slam poetry. Tried to write, like, dude, I didn't perform it or anything, but I would watch it and try to, like, write it, you know?
That's great.
No.
I wish there was a video of that.
Yeah, me too. There's just video of me doing backyard wrestling, which is also cringy, but, you know, a little bit.
See, I got into backyard wrestling at one point, too, but that was a very short-lived phase. I think that's because I think the backyard wrestling video game came out.
Yeah.
And then I got really into that, and then quickly I think it was over.
So you bringing up wrestling is something that I need to ask you about, because there's a specific photo you posted of you as a child, and you have wrestling action figures. It's like a posed photo, like it's like a Sears family portrait, but you have like a British bulldog.
Cool photo.
Yeah, you have like a British bulldog action figure in your hand. First off, how did they let you have that in the picture? And like, are those things that you held all the time? Did you have to have those in photos?
I remember being obsessed with them. It's really funny because I can't remember much of the trivia anymore about like who the characters are. I mean, I remember I was looking at the picture and I was like, oh, I can see X, Y, and Z. But I was like, it didn't stick with me. I was like, I mean, that photo was kindergarten. So
it's classic.
I was just obsessed with it. And so I guess what the deal was that I took a normal photo and I was like, okay, I have this idea for this second photo, so you need to help me do this. And so I made them pose, and I had my mom told me the story recently where I was like, I wanted them to be specific places. It's like one's perched on my shoulder, and you know, like I don't know. I wanted people to know I was into wrestling, I guess.
Would you be surprised if I told you that there's like men that are like 45 years old that probably take the same exact photo for Instagram?
I mean, I'm not surprised at all. I'm very aware of the wrestling culture now, even though I'm not tuned into it.
Oh man, yeah. There's people that do Instagrams of like stop motion wrestling action figure like photos and stuff, and it's gotten really intense with the quarantine now. People have way more time on their hands.
A lot of free time.
Yep. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about Regional Justice Center. So you guys are kind of a touring machine. How much touring did you guys do in 2019, and what's some of the coolest places that you got to play and see?
So we've done, it's actually interesting, since the band there in 2017, and 2017 was our slowest year, but even then we still probably did like 50 days on tour that year. Mm-hmm. But it's the 2018 and 2019, we each did like 80 shows.
Wait, what was that number again?
For a non-full-time band, I think it's like kind of crazy.
What was that number again?
We did like between 80 and 90 shows.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, shoot, we got to go to Japan.
That's amazing.
That was a huge deal, for all of us. I mean, getting to like be invited to like across the world and mm-hmm. go play four shows, crazy. And I mean, culturally, like music wise, Japan was so interesting because all the venues were like really small, but mm-hmm. had full sound. And like, we played in this room that was, we're 360 degrees surrounded by people. Like, we played in almost the middle of the room, and that was like one of the coolest shows I've ever attended or played. We did get to go to Europe the year before, and that was like a really cool experience, like going to Vienna, like so many beautiful cities. All the shows for the most part not amazing, mm-hmm. but I mean, getting to go is a crazy experience. U.S., like, we always have an amazing time in Denver.
Okay.
Denver is, like, one of the cream-of-the-crop places for hardcore currently.
So are you the person who's in charge of setting up your booking and getting your travel taken care of and stuff? Or do you guys have an agent? Or how does that work?
Yeah, I do all the booking. I mean, there's sometimes when we, like, hop on and off, like, a package thing, mm-hmm. where obviously I won't do the booking, but for the most part, it's all me, which I would love to hand over if the right person came along. But in this world, like, if you're doing headlining shows and stuff for a band our size, it doesn't really make sense to have someone else booking it. You just, like, I feel like DIY is the ultimate route. Like, the promoters care more. I'm also very neurotic about bugging people and making sure that things are getting worked on. And I don't know that I trust just anyone to be doing that. So, for now, yeah, it's just me.
You bring up a good point there. You said, like, it just doesn't make sense to have someone booking it for you and stuff. And that's a question I have is, just like looking in, you know, If you can do it yourself, maybe do it yourself. But like, at what point, Ian, in your opinion, at what point does it make sense for a band to, you know, hire a manager, hire a booking person to handle it for them? Is there like a plateau you reach when you can just give it to someone else and it makes sense, or is it kind of just like band by band?
I think it's band by band. I mean, because I mean, it also depends on what your goals are. So for us, like, if I can get the booking agent and they're putting us out with bands that we need to be playing with, that we're not getting the opportunities to, like, by ourselves because we're not, like, being submitted for those tours, yeah. then that makes sense. But and that's something that going forward I'm really trying to do, because I don't want to just be playing to our audience, per se. I want to play to other people's fans and reach new people versus just doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that's one of the difficulties, is you just don't hire just a manager and a booking agent. What you have to do is you generally have to be approached by somebody.
Yeah.
Because it's not like the type of thing where like people are like, oh, booking agent services, $15 an hour. You know, it's
yeah.
like, you've got to have someone that's invested in your band and like gets it and knows where you are trying to go.
Well, You know, I'm not a musician myself, so I'm just curious. I don't really have any insight on that. I was generally just, you know, interested. So I appreciate you giving some input there. And I wanted to ask you about, so Regional Justice Center, you guys are a very, very gnarly sounding band, but you guys also have a pretty in-depth and well thought out like message. And there's definitely like a theme throughout, at least from what I understand. And that's about the justice system. Is that correct?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people give us the rap of, that's the anti-cop band. That's the, like, they talk about prison reform, which, like, I don't necessarily talk about. So the band started from my brother, my little brother, also from Unumclaw, obviously. He got incarcerated in summer of 2016.
Okay.
And I kind of started conceiving of everything as I was going to visit him at the Kent Regional Justice Center.
Oh yeah.
And the idea was just like, oh, Regional Justice Center, that sounds like a crazy name for a hardcore band. And then it turned into kind of this larger thing where I have his involvement in it, and I've just used a lot of my space and platform to talk about some of the stuff that I've seen, versus it's not so much actually in the lyrics a lot of the revolution of it. You know, it's just like, I've used the time to talk about things like Securus Technologies, which is the people that run the prison phones, and just different things that I've seen and experienced. And so now it's like given us this reputation as the prison reform band.
Prison Reform Corps.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm glad you kind of cleared that up at least, but you know, definitely something that you know, even some of the t-shirts you guys had, like I remember there's a long sleeve that Ryan the Beard had, and I was like, oh yeah, that would make sense with that. But you know, the band, what was
into it? I mean, it is a visually unifying theme. I think we've had like a judge at a sentencing type thing, and then a lot of it has had like cops or criminals, you know, just like various things within that realm, because it's ended up being somewhat of our unifying thing for the entire project.
So do you so you say like the kind of a unifying theme, and you say like, and there's kind of like an aesthetic to some bands that, you know, not necessarily your band, but I'm just some bands come out and they say like, this is the way we're going to do it aesthetic wise. And like, this is what we're going to be about. Is that a conversation that you have with a band if you want to, if you want that to be the vibe, or does it just kind of flow, or is there something that you set in stone? Like, we want this to represent us. Does that question make sense?
It kind of developed over time. I mean, it just ended up being the only thing that really made sense. I mean, the name is so ridiculous. It's like two extremely benign words. Like, if you think about it, like, regional and center are like not interesting words at all. And the only thing that makes the name interesting is justice. So it's like, and with that, you know, it just was like, and a lot of the times I've commissioned things based around things that are happening currently. And so like when we did the shirt that with a judge sentencing somebody, I mean, that we made that like right when after my brother got sentenced to prison.
Wow. Yeah.
And so it just like kind of like the inspiration ebbs and flows with the real life occurrences essentially, or sometimes I'm focusing on different themes or just kind of whatever rises to the top. And then sometimes it's just like literally whatever an artist is coming up with, but generally it's kind of all been focused around that because that's what we've done. And it definitely isn't a process of like trying to reinvent anything necessarily, just trying to keep the same themes fresh or barely changing them, you know.
And you said that, so you wrote your own new project, and I can get the vibe that you are very, you know, proactive with creating things yourself. As far as Regional Justice Center, is that something that you're like the main songwriter, or is it a collaborative thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually interesting. I've written everything up until the current record we're working on, and two other members like wrote a song each for it. But for the most part, yeah, it's all my songs. I use our guitar player, Alex. He's like my main partner in the band, and I use him as like a sounding board a lot of times. So I'll be like, I got this idea, or I got this riff, or I got this, you know, I send him all my demos and like gauge his reaction of if I need to keep working on something or what it is. But for the most part, it's all just my songwriting with them, the input of like, yeah, not quite there, or I think you should do this after that, you know?
It's always interesting for me to hear, like, different, because, like, sometimes, you know, like, I talked to Steve Austin from Today is the Day, and that's, like, his band, you know, like, that's his baby, and so, like, it's always interesting to see the different dynamics of songwriting and stuff, and so with Regional Justice Center and all the bands that you have going on, and you know all the bands that you have in the past, and also your kind of blossoming video production career, and a lot of things you have going on, what keeps you interested in writing abrasive, gnarly, hardcore, you know, punk and like metal leaning like noise music? Like, what keeps you interested in writing gnarly and not just focusing on, you know, some other things? Or there's got to be something that keeps your love alive of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I've been hounded by some other people in the video world of like, why are you doing this? Like, you could be making money.
Yeah,
like, actual money.
Like, that's like a theme in your podcast. Is there like, damn it. But I still love this.
Yeah, it's just like, I'm just helplessly drawn to it. I mean, like, sometimes I have to fight myself to not like tweet out like I love blast beats, because I just literally think some thing that I love. I don't know. I love abrasiveness, and the more that I work on these like pop projects and things, like I was interning for a director, and we worked on like some stuff for like, and like all these like big pop things, and I was like, when I was leaving there, I was turning on the most gnarly music I can because I'm sick of hearing pop music.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't know, just I love abrasiveness. I love gnarliness. And it's, to me, it works the same, I think, as it does pop music in other people's heads.
Nice. Well, you're certainly getting into that world of you know, like the cross section of like pop and you know, getting into that. But you're also doing a lot of, like, I saw you did a Gate Creeper video, and those guys are huge. And I mean, that's certainly popular, but not pop. How did you get into, you know, make? I know that you, some of the early stuff was just kind of like on your own, right? It was just like DIY project of doing music videos. How did you get into
a lot of just doing it one man crew music videos, and then eventually, you know, I got a two man crew. But it was just literally, I mean, I started with making a music video for my own band, which is like, generally if someone I know is in a band and like is like, oh, I want to make music, you have a band. It's
yep.
Like you'll have somebody to watch that music video, which at the time, like, the band that I released the music video for was Seattle's New Gods at the very beginning, and there was no audience to watch the music video.
Yeah.
But it gives you the ability to work on the skills. And so over time, you know, you just keep doing that. And then hopefully I eventually just started cold emailing people. Angel Dust being the biggest one that I've worked with that has like worked into like a continuing, creative relationship. And that all started from me cold emailing the singer Justice Tripp and being like, hey, I'm a big fan. Like, I made this music video for this band called Gag. Like, you should, I know you've seen it. You know, like, I would just be like, they posted it. So I was like, I'm going to email them. And basically through all that, just ended up working with slightly bigger people consistently.
And now these days, is it something that you seek out, or do people seek you out?
No, actually, I haven't sent a cold email in some time.
That's great.
But I should. Because the thing is, like, kind of where I'm at now is I'm very much in the pop punk realm. Mm-hmm. I did that Gate Creeper video recently. But I don't really want to be doing aggressive music either. I really want to be doing pop music or like hip hop, like things that lend themselves better to visuals. I don't find that like the visual palette you can have for like abrasive music isn't very wide.
Yeah.
Without it no longer fitting. So I really don't have much desire to work in that realm.
Unless you're like Acacia Strain and you just do something so stupid and wacky, like they just do things like oh hey, let's wear bunny costumes. It's like, okay. But not every band is like that.
Yeah, and I don't know that bunny. I mean, there was one video I did with a bunny costume, but that was okay. That was the idea. I just achieved it. But yeah, I don't know. It's the world that I want to, and also there's not a ton of big budgets in like aggressive music anyway.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
And that's why I'm getting better budgets in this pop punk realm. But at the same time, like, I don't really like the music as much, so I really want to be segueing somewhere else.
Okay.
But and that's also gonna be a process. I mean, currently production is illegal because it requires too many people. So therefore, you know, maybe on the other side of this, I'll reshape my career. Who knows?
Well, okay. So, are there any tropes in music videos that you just like cringe when you hear people like wanna do, or like you just think about like, is there any tropes you're just like, I don't want to do that, but okay.
Well, at this point, anytime someone says, I want to go into the desert, I say, no. that's been the thing. I did two desert music videos basically in a row, and
yeah.
I wanted to die because they're so hard to make, and going to the desert sucks. And wow. It's not like we have trailers and things. You can sit in an AC'd room. It's just like you're just miserable in the heat. That one sucks. The people's music videos, I really hate when someone wakes up. The waking up at the beginning of a music video. There's all sorts of things that bother me.
Yeah.
And I won't get into go into all of them. But definitely waking up in a music video bothers me. And then I just refuse to go into it at that point.
What are some so when people are done with this video or interview or if they just want to pause it and check out some stuff, what are a couple music videos of yours that you're proud of that you would like you would actually like?
I would say
enjoy
the most proud and the most like I feel like represents the style that I really want to be doing more of is Angel Dust's "Want It All" music video.
Okay,
that's one of the desert videos that. Which I refer, I wanted to kill myself while we were making that. And then, that one I'm really proud of. I'm really proud of this. I did this music video with Super Crush for a song called I've Been Around.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a shot-for-shot remake of the intro to the skate video Goldfish. And
oh, yeah.
I sent it to Girl Skateboards, and then I actually got an email back with a quote from Spike Jonze saying how much you like it, and that was one of my achievements.
Wow. So you know Spike Jonze watched it and he loved it. That's really dope,
yeah.
Dude. Holy.
That was a big one for me. So those two I would say, I mean, I have a website, it's Ian Shelton. You can see all the stuff that I'm not totally ashamed of.
Yeah.
So
okay, rad. Well, just a couple more questions here. I'm not going to keep you all day, but if you could pick four albums that made an impact on your life, just to put you on the spot, what are four albums that made a positive impact on your life?
Four. Yeah, that's a big one. Okay, so I guess I didn't get into the Beatles until I was like 24 or something like
okay.
that.
Okay, yeah.
But Abbey Road, I find to be like one of my like biggest influences.
Awesome.
Currently. And when we were talking about like what draws me to aggressive music, one of the things now is that like I take from the Beatles all the time and I make it and I put it into RJC.
Oh, wow.
And no,
okay.
It's untraceable. Like I don't try to make a hardcore record inspired by other hardcore records. I'm trying to like take these elements from like classic rock or hip hop even, or like all these different areas and put that all into a blast beat record, essentially.
Oh, cool.
So I would say that one. Another current one, which like speaks to like the like proliferation that I really enjoy, is like I would put Guided by Voices, Alien Lanes.
Okay. Is that a good one to start with? Because I always hear people talk about Guided by Voices, and I've never done the dive. Is that a good
Alien
one to start
Lanes
with?
Alien Lanes and B-1000 are the two that everyone starts with.
Okay.
Those are like the two like designated entry points for that band. There's better records out there, but those are the ones that like prime you for the rest of the discography.
Cool.
Which is huge. I would say Charles Bronson's Youth Attack, because nice. That was the literally like, sent me to his MySpace. Like, go listen to my MySpace profile song right now.
Yeah.
And he had created like a MySpace page for Charles, and then he put the song Marriage Can Suck It as his profile song. And I was like, I went there and I was like, holy shit. Like, this is amazing. Like, that's the whole song. I can trace that moment.
That's cool.
To being like, you know, that was my love for Power Rounds, like starting. So that made a huge impact on me.
Nice.
I'm trying to think of another one that got me like so young that I just was obsessed with, because God of My Voices and the Beatles are both things I got into in my 20s.
Yeah. Well, let's think.
Charles Bronson.
Let's think here. Something that was in that original CD binder. What was your favorite that was in that CD binder?
Oh, definitely The Addicts.
Nice. Okay.
The Addicts was huge for me, and still something that is like in like constant rotation. Honestly, just I don't even know. I mean, like, I think there's some things like there's that song "Easy Way Out." Mm-hmm. And the way that the harmonic, like the natural harmonic in it, is so abrasive. Like, that song has such melody, but also it's like heavy. And it's also about taking the easy way out. And so I think, the Addicts, like, hands down, like one of my favorite punk bands of all time.
Awesome, man. That's a good Beatles, Guided by Voices, Charles Bronson, and the Addicts. Wow. Okay. I like it. All right, Ian, one more question, and then I'll let you go. Pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got it.
Okay. I mean, so I haven't, I didn't even tell anybody really about this when it's happening, but I have what looks to be like a bullet wound in my back currently, because
oh my God.
I actually, while we're on the Gatekeeper video, they had one of their friends had passed away from uh-huh. cancer. Wow. And my mom had melanoma. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I got this weird thing in my back. I should go get it checked out. And like the music, like making that music video, like hands down was like, I'm going to go to the doctor. I'll do it. And there was like something, it wasn't like melanoma, but they're like, it's going to be eventually.
Okay.
And so
it's like precancerous.
Precancerous. And they dug out a hole in my back. Like while I was awake,
oh
it sounded
God.
Like the dude was like cutting paper. Like I could hear it.
Ugh.
And it's like, and he's like, do you want to see it? And it like shows me a chunk out of my back where I could see like layers of fat, layers of skin. Like is the grossest thing. But, they stitched me up, and now it looks like I have a bullet wound in my back.
Jesus Christ. Well, I'm glad you got that checked out, dude.
I don't have any other, like, interesting scar, I don't think.
Wow. All right. Is there anything you want to say to the Northwest while you're on the line here to Metal Shop or to anyone here in the Northwest or just anything?
Leave the Northwest. So I do want to say this about the Northwest. I love it like more than anywhere, really. But I found that like specifically being from the world that you and I are from, mm-hmm. of hardcore and kind of going to the same party all the time,
yeah.
essentially. I found that when I left, like when the social like tie, not the social ties, they weren't broken, but you know, like when I wasn't like immediately surrounded by the same people all the time, like I found that my brain expanded.
Okay.
And that like my artistic process changed because I was no longer viewing those people as my audience.
Yeah.
And so literally, I would say like if you're living in the Northwest, like you live in a pocket, like you probably are surrounded by the people you do or don't like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Go somewhere else for a bit.
Yeah. And, see the world.
Experience something else.
Not right now, though, because we're on a travel restriction, but, you know.
Or do it because flights are damn cheap.
That's a good point. It's like disaster tourism, dude. That's insane. All right, man. Well, let's just say we don't know. There's no time frame on this, right? But like if things were to get back to normal or quote unquote the new normal, what do you hope to achieve in 2020 with your band and everything else?
So, RDSC has been, we had to cancel one tour, but we have two different 7-inches coming out in the next couple months.
Nice.
And then an LP in the fall. So, I guess I'm going to record that next week. So,
yeah.
hopefully my biggest hope is that we're not screwed over for our fall tours,
yeah,
and that we can like release the record without there being any problems. And other than that, yeah, I'm just hoping to keep making and not hopefully get stopped up anymore.
Right on, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to have the conversation. Good luck on the record next week. I know you don't need it, but you know, have fun and stay safe and stay sane, dude.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yep, take it easy, Ian.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Donor-advised funds from DAF Giving 360. Your clients can donate cash, publicly traded securities, or appreciated assets like real estate. It's a simple, tax-smart way to give. Learn more at dafgiving360.org/advisors.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.